Good morning. Would like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session, May City Council for Thursday, November 4th, 5th, 4th, 4th.
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 2nd.
I only have one problem. I didn't have an agenda in front of me.
How could it be November? It's 94
Mayor,
degrees.
Mayor, the first item we'd like to cover is a special council meeting. There was...
This is correct.
There is a an event, the commemorative Air Force Museum, and they were not able to get their request in for the...
That's right. I forgot. Okay. So instead of calling to order the study session, I'm calling to order a special session of the May City Council for Thursday, November 4th, 2010, to consider two items. Before we begin, we'd like to excuse Councilmember Higgins. She's at another event she had to be to this morning. I would also like to welcome, for the first time, Councilmember-elect, officially, now, Chris Glover, who is joining us here on the stand.
Golf.
What? Golf clap?
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. All right, we have two items on the agenda. Is Mr. Brady, you want to recap that real quickly?
Sure. Again, these are liquor license applications for events that are one event that's taking place on November 13th by the Commemorative Air Force Museum. And the other one is also from Commemorative Air Force Museum, and it's another event the following Tuesday, November 16th. Okay. So we would ask for council's approval. We just were not made it get in time for the deadline for the last council meeting, but obviously these are coming up prior to our next council meeting. So we recommend for approval.
Okay, we have a motion to approve from Councilmember Summers, a second from Councilmember Richens. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motions carry. The motion carries. Items from Citizen President. Do we have any requests to speak, Ms. Crocker?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay, we no mission. We have a motion to adjourn, a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Now we will move into the study session. And the first item on the study session is we are going to move into an executive session. And apologize for this. We're flipping things around a little bit. We'll go into executive session for a few minutes because I have a meeting I have to attend and therefore perhaps need to leave early before we finish the other stuff, at which time Vice Mayor will take over. So I have a motion from Councilmember Summers to move into E-session, second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
You can stay here.
We are now moving into executive session. Thank you very much.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on then with our regular agenda for a study session. Again, we excuse the mayor. He had to go to another meeting. So we will continue with item 2A, here a presentation and discuss and provide direction on the Central Main Street plan and form-based code. Is Shay kicking off or John? Who's okay? Go ahead, Shay.
Good morning, Vice Mayor, Council. My name is Shay Yocum. I'm a project manager at the Office of Economic Development. To my right is Jeff McVeigh. He is the lead planner for the Central Main Plan. And to Jeff's right is John Wesley, the planning director. We're excited to have this opportunity this morning to update Council on the progress of the Central Main Plan. Before Jeff and John to get into some of the details of that progress, I want to take a quick minute to just remind Council about the importance of this planning effort to successful economic development in downtown, but also in the rest of the study area. First, the impetus for this planning effort was really the extension of light rail transit from the Sycamore Transit Station to just east of Mesa Drive. As Council is aware, that extension will add four new transit stations or light rail stops to Mesa, three of those stations are in the Central Main Street planning area. This plan was really challenged to place an emphasis on those station areas and look for ways to facilitate investment and economic opportunities in and around those stations. Secondly, a major deliverable of this planning effort is the addition of a form-based code option to the City of Mesa's zoning ordinance. That tool is intended to encourage investment and reinvestment by adding predictability and flexibility to the development planning process. And lastly, this plan will look to call out strategic public improvements in the study area that will enhance the economic development potential of the area and hopefully drive and attract complementary private investment. So with that, I'll turn it over to John to keep it.
There it goes. Okay. I want to take just a quick moment here to do a little bit of introduction of the area before I turn it over to Jeff to talk about the details. Quickly remind Council of the planning area that's involved, going from Extension over to just past Gilbert Road, primarily between Broadway and University, or yes, Broadway and University, with a little bit north of that in the Evergreen area and up at Mesa Drive. This map also shows some sub-areas that we're looking at within the overall planning area, where we'll look at each of those in a little bit more detail as they focus around primarily the different station areas and other important areas of the planning area. It also looks a little bit at some of the relationships and transitions between the different areas. In terms of our overall process, we've been moving through the background issue identification. We're starting to get into drafting the actual plan document and the policies. Our intent was to have a second community-wide meeting here coming up sometime this month with some of the work that we've been doing and the way the process is now coming together with the study of the sub-areas. That's probably not going to happen until after the first of the year. And so this time frame that we laid out at the beginning is probably going to slip a month or two in the overall process, but we're still fairly much on target and on time with the overall effort. Today's presentation is going to review some of the work that's been done by the Plan Advisory Committee, and particularly the guiding principles that they have developed and the goals that go along with those. Work that's been done on what we call a reality check exercise that helped us to identify the key areas within the overall planning area that we really want to make sure we maintain, and those that are going to, we think, transform or change over time the most, and then those areas in between, and the kind of what we're looking at in terms of relative intensity or density of that new development that will occur. We are looking for council to give us some feedback on these, at least a general head nod if, you know, that you think we're moving in the right direction, or if you have anything you think we ought to be looking at doing differently. That we can get that input now before we move further in this process and get more detailed into the policies and projects that we think would work in the future. Then also we're going to update you on the form-based code based on last week's workshop with our consultant being here in town. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff, and he will go through the details.
Good morning, Vice Mayor, Council. The last time we were here to give you an update, we had discussed that there was a good discussion with our committee on the overall vision for the plan. We ended up deciding that given the diverse nature of the planning area, that it was best that we have a vision that's very broad. So we're settling on something along the line of the area will evolve into an economically, environmentally, and socially vibrant community. To help us, though, refine that, we've come up with 5 guiding principles. And that when you take those all together, those really come up with a detailed vision for the Central Maine planning area. You have the complete set of guiding principles in the council report, so I'm not going to go through each of those and read them and bore you with my speech. But in general, the people-friendly community is related to improving the built environment for the people by making it interesting, active, accessible, and safe. A prosperous community relates to improving the economic success and vitality of the Central Maine area, with an emphasis on the downtown area. A diverse community relates to celebrating social and cultural diversity, but it also takes into account that we want to encourage diversity in architecture and the built form. A distinctive community relates to enhancement of the existing character, and then also through redevelopment, creating new character and identity centered on new station areas. And finally, the environmentally conscious community relates to encouraging green development through green building practices, but it also looks at making the Central Maine area more livable by understanding that we are in a desert climate and that has to be taken into account in each development. Unlike most of our planning efforts, that are centered around creating categories based on general plan like land use, transportation, economic development, we have formatted this plan to be built off of these guiding principles. So goals are being developed for each guiding principle so that when you look at it, we think it'll be a more holistic approach to the plan. It won't divide the plan into separate chapters that really don't relate to each other. Before I move on to those goals, though, I'd like to get your thoughts, your feedback, your comments on the guiding principles, if you think we're going in the right direction with that.
Look, go ahead.
So far, we've gone through with the committee, and we have created plan goals for the entire study area. They've been included, again, in your council report in detail. They are up on the screen, and I won't go through them again individually, but as I go through each of these slides, we are, again, looking for your feedback and comments on the individual goals as they relate to each of the guiding principles. As a note, we are continuing to massage these goals. We are doing some wordsmithing still. We had a meeting earlier this week where there's a possibility under a distinctive community we may take two goals and create one out of it. And then under environmentally conscious community, we have a goal in there about healthy living and healthy communities that we don't really know what to do with yet, but we want to have it in there. We just don't know how to do it. So happy to take any comments.
Go ahead, Dave.
I think that's an important component of what we're doing. One of the things under your environmentally that you talked about, the recognition of the Arizona climate and anything that we do, you know, make sure we have shade and connectivity and walkability. There's organizations throughout the state, too, that talk about these livability principles that you can tap into to help you craft those goals.
Okay.
So,
any other questions, input?
Mm-hmm. So if council feels we're moving in the right direction, the last note I will have on the plan goals is that that first slide that John showed you of the plan area, it had several sub-areas built into it, seven sub-areas. We're going to be going through in the next few months, and we're going to be going through each of those sub-areas and identifying specific goals and policies that may relate to those sub-areas that don't relate to others. What happens out in Gilbert, Maine is going to be quite a bit different than happens in downtown, so we might have separate goals that relate to each of those sub-areas. A couple months ago, we did an exercise with the advisory committee that we called the reality check. We kind of stole the idea from the MAC 21, Urban Land Institute. What we did was we divided our committee into five groups, and we gave them enough yellow tiles and red tiles to represent 4,000 new dwelling units and 1.8 million new square feet of new non-residential use, and we asked them to put that into the study area. That'll help us identify what areas they think need to be redeveloped, what areas they don't want to see development, and then on top of that, what areas or what type of intensity that they think they should see. The next few slides are just some of the pictures of the exercise from some of the groups.
Go ahead.
Who did you have in, and did you calculate it all out at the end, see how it worked? I mean, was there room for that kind of intensity to be added? What was your conclusion, I guess?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Richens, surprisingly, we were getting a lot of requests halfway through, three quarters of the way through the exercise for more tiles. They didn't think they had enough. We were being too, especially with the non-residential uses, they thought we were being too limited. So easily, as staff, when we tested this exercise, we were able to put all that right in downtown square by ourselves without moving out. So I think we haven't taken it out for an actual economic evaluation to see whether that's the reality check side of it that we still need to think about as to whether the market will bear it. But
now when the
committee thought so.
Now, when the Urban Land Institute does theirs, they have considerations for transportation connectivity and open space. Did you use those considerations all as you did your plan? Did people think about that?
I guess first part is that we felt that in the Central Maine area, we have an existing transportation network that's pretty solid, and we didn't need to put too much consideration into new transportation elements because they are either already there or they will be included in redevelopment as new interior roads. Park and open space, unfortunately, we didn't have that included, but it was a consideration as we go through this that each development or redevelopment is going to have some level of open space or connectivity to other open spaces that we need to take into consideration.
Thank you.
Based on our analysis of that exercise, it really gave us the impression that the committee focuses on transforming this area into from the auto-oriented development pattern to a more pedestrian-oriented pattern development. We were able to compile that and create this map. It's in your packet. It shows the areas of maintenance, evolution, and transition. The maintenance areas shown in green are primarily the stable and historic single residence neighborhoods. You could expect some modifications or enhancements to occur there. You could even expect some buildings to be taken out and replaced. But for the most part, the emphasis will be on maintaining the established development pattern in these areas. The evolution areas shown on the map in blue, these are primarily along arterials and midsection collector streets. They are dominated by the auto-oriented pattern development. And the idea behind this is that while the overall intensity of that area may not change, the pattern of development would change, so that as new development and redevelopment came in, we would get buildings that street load, we'd have a more friendly, a wider sidewalk, more pedestrian-oriented along the streetscape. Within the downtown area, though, where it's shown in blue, the intent would be that downtown would evolve into taller buildings while still respecting the existing character and feel of the downtown area. The red areas are the transformation areas, and these are where we expect the greatest change. They're generally focused on the light rail stations, and they will take advantage of that light rail area, their station, to create a mixed-use environment, urban environment, that is anchored by the station. I suppose at this point, having looked at that map and seen how the committee and we're looking at the area changing, whether you have some thoughts or comments on this redevelopment scheme, that'd be welcome as well.
Okay. No comment? Go ahead, Dave.
I do like how you framed that about evolution, maintenance, transformation. I think that's a lot less threatening than somebody getting drawn into a redevelopment area. You know, that there are options here. There are probably some properties within a transformation area that appropriately would stay put. And I think that's important for the public to understand that this isn't, you know, 1970 style urban transformation where you're knocking everything down and trying to get new projects in there, but that this is a gradual market driven transformation that can occur, but people that have existing uses, is that pretty much what people that have existing uses are welcome to stay, and actually kind of adds to the character of the strip, right? Okay.
Exactly.
And with that discussion, which takes us into the next part, is we're wanting to provide the tools with the form-based code to allow for that transformation and evolution as necessary.
Exactly. Taking it to the next step, we then did the analysis based on where they placed and how much of that new development they placed to give a general or a relative intensity to the development. These are things that could happen over time, and it could take a long time, but in general, we would expect the highest intensity areas to be in downtown with buildings of six stories plus around the Main Street and Country Club and Main Street and Mesa stations. You could expect 3 to 4 story, maybe 5 stories. At the Stapley and Main Station, you could generally expect a 3-story development pattern. And then around the Gilbert Main area, you could expect 3 to 4 stories. This slide is a very basic generalization, as if you were looking just at Main Street and the skyline of Main Street. And for the most part, it's a 1 to 2 story development pattern. There are some exceptions, the Mesa City Plaza, Wells Fargo building, one McDonald. But if you were to translate what the committee came up with and in intensity, overall you could expect an increase in intensity throughout the planning area, and it would be kind of like a wave where you would notice the increased intensity at each of the station areas within the study area. Again, as with the other topics, the guiding principles, the goals, we'd like to get your feedback and thoughts on the intensities that are being shown here for the study area.
Can you put that slide up that you had, the one that looked like rubber bands got spilled? And then there was one right after that. I don't know if you showed it up on the screen yet, too. that gives a better visual representation. It's in our PowerPoint. It's right after. Lost it all. Yeah, that one.
All right.
I think this one gives you a little bit better feel for what you're talking about, and I think there's another layer that you're going to add to that particular one.
Yeah.
That so it's what's being proposed isn't too far off of some of the existing. It's kind of just filling in the spaces in between almost. Is that kind of the idea?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Richens, in some areas you can see quite a bit of change, you know, at Gilbert and Main, but in downtown it's an increase in intensity, but we have buildings that are either that tall or taller already in the study area. It's just filling in the gaps in between them. And I think it's important to note also that this is a generalization. I mean, there could be individual buildings that are much taller than what this is showing, or even in shorter, and still be within the constraints of the proposals.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So I'm going to give Jeff just a moment's break here to transition then from the plan into the form-based code. And again, the form-based code will be a primary implementation tool for the plan once it's adopted, because a form-based code, as we've learned, really helps facilitate that mixed-use urban environment better than the standard Euclidean zone does, and really helps us look at that public realm and concentrates our attention there and in creating those public spaces. We have a separate consultant, Opticos Design, who is working on the form-based code. They were in town last week for the second of their workshops that they're doing with us. We held that over at the Arizona Museum for Youth. It's a two-day event, primarily targeted with working with staff for a couple of days, going through in detail some of the early drafts of their actual zoning code, but ended with an open house presentation that the public was invited to, and provided a good opportunity for the public to see where we're at and what some of the results can be from implementation of this code. We had approximately 35 attendees there to view the presentation and to answer questions and look at the various materials that were developed. And so again, one of the primary tools that we'll have for implementing the form-based code is what's called a regulating plan. This is, again, an early draft of that plan. Basically, it's the zoning map version for a form-based code. And the different shades of color there represent the different location, the different T-zones on the ground that Jeff will talk about in just a minute. Has that greatest intensity at the main and center area, and then slowly transitions out from that, again, picking up extra intensities at each of the station areas. They're really focusing on that center and main location because of the stops that are in that area and the walk shed that can be developed from that area and the amount of intensity that can happen. The regulating plan, as it's developed, can also address some of the issues that might be there in terms of the street frontages and street types that will go together with the actual on-site development to make it all work together and create that urban space that we're looking for. So with that, I'll turn it back to Jeff to talk a little more specifically about the code.
As John noted, the regulating plan's kind of like your zoning map, and I think you've experienced enough of a discussion on the form-based code. You understand the transects, but generally T1 is going to be your most rural, and T6 is going to be your most urban, and those would translate to, instead of having a R16 or a C2, you'll have a T3 or a T4. Uses aside, for this plan or for this form-based code, generally we are focusing on the T3 through T6. Districts as they're mostly single residents to the urban district. The T3 neighborhood transect is going to be primarily a single residence district in the future, but it will also allow compatible duplex and mansion apartments to go in. The T4 district has been divided into three sub-districts: neighborhood, which will be primarily a medium density residential development pattern; neighborhood flex, which will still allow residential, but it will also accommodate some ground floor neighborhood serving retail. And then the third, Main Street, which is still going to allow upper floor residential, but it starts to focus more on the ground floor retail and creating a more urban space. The T5 district is also divided into three types: the neighborhood, which will be again primarily a medium to high density residential district; the Main Street Flex, which will again, allow upper floor residential while transitioning from the commercial districts to a residential district by allowing mixes of uses. And then the Main Street district is intended to allow medium intensity vertical mixed use developments. The T6 district is going to be the highest intensity vertical mixed use development pattern, where the ground floors will be devoted to commercial use, and the upper floors can be devoted to either commercial or residential uses. But primarily the main difference between T4 through T6 is that each time you go up one transect, you're going up in intensity of development.
Go ahead.
In like a T5, you wouldn't be requiring commercial there. So say if, you know, somebody wanted to do a residential only project, they could do that. But in when you start transitioning into the most intense zone, that's when you're talking about we'd really evaluate what's on that ground floor level. Okay.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Richens, it's kind of a yes or no answer, I think. There's three levels of T5, so a T5 neighborhood would be primarily residential and would not require commercial to be part of it. The T5 Main Street Flex, again, it could be all residential, but it's flexible so that it can allow that transition between commercial and residential. But then when you get to the T5 Main Street, there would be a requirement that that ground floor be commercial in use, and then upper floors could be residential or commercial.
Okay. The reason I ask is because sometimes you'll drive around and you'll see this kind of out of context, quote unquote, mixed use building that gets put somewhere, and the commercial is just a flop because it's not incorporated in with what you're describing in the T5 neighborhood.
Right.
You know, you don't have enough intensity. I mean, because you need more intensity than just who lives in the building to drive any kind of retail. And so that's why I was trying to understand how that would fit in the parts.
And I think one of the ways that that will be addressed is that once we get to the regulating plan and we have more detail to be able to show with that regulating plan, you'll be able to see that there'll be kind of a transition. So the T6 neighborhood will transition into T5 neighborhoods and then T4. So each time you're stepping down in intensity, but you're creating that essentially that circle of residential and users there.
So there's enough flexibility that if there was an appropriate market for a small shop in one of the buildings, then they have the flexibility to do that kind of thing. That's what this, okay, perfect.
The next couple of illustrations are the consultant just took a couple of our potential development sites and they applied the form-based code just to see how it could look. This first one is actually site 17. And what this could ends up allowing is, I'll get to the right spot here. It ends up showing an entirely new mixed-use development. It allows a great deal of commercial office space, which could include a healthcare component, but also includes a large amount of new medium-density residential development. One of the things that our consultant keeps on telling us is that they feel that there is a lack of high-quality medium-density residential in the valley, and that the city of Mesa could be a forerunner and really capture a market that isn't being captured in the valley right now.
Go ahead, Dennis.
I attended a conference last week on historic preservation, but the focus was on the form-based codes and how they interact. And one of the interesting things that some of the speakers talked about was the changing demographics in society with the kind of the graying of the baby boomers, empty nesters, but also combined with young professionals. And the thrust of their comments were that the type of medium density residential is something that they believe is going to be, there will be a demand for it. So I think that I think the consultant's remarks are right on target because of the lack of this kind of housing in the valley could create opportunities, I think, for us as we look how to apply it. Thank you.
Dave?
Could you give some examples about what you mean by that housing type? So we can kind of understand.
Vice Mayor Jones, Councilmember Richens, one of the ones that they like to point to us the most is a courtyard house, a courthouse development. It could be 3-4 stories, but it's built around a common courtyard that's shared by all the residents. It also is very good for the Arizona climate because it can be oriented for the sun and also have that escape place that's nice and green and lush to help with the cooling of the air. This plan is the Mesa City Campus at Center and Main. You'll notice down in the on the bottom left corner is MCP. But what they've done essentially is shown how with the redevelopment, potentially through a public-private partnership, we could get, depending on intensities, this plan shows somewhere between 650,000 and 1 million square feet of new non-residential use. This could also include that educational component that we're looking for downtown. In addition, just for illustrative purposes, they showed a new city plaza or a new public plaza with a new city hall. We looked back through some historic photos and we found that this tower element was once downtown on one. I can't remember what the building was, but I think it was right next door to the old bank. I can't remember what the building was. I think it might have been the Arizona Republic. It might have been the Republic newspapers at that time. But it's a nice example of how land that we already have could be used to leverage a great deal of redevelopment. This illustration and the next one after it shows how the form-based code could be used to transition existing suburban developments, commercial developments, into a more urban flavor. The first slide shows how you could take a 10-acre suburban plaza, subdivide it, lay out a road network, and then over time you could see how it can transition over time to include more uses and change it from that suburban pattern development to a more urban pattern development. This next one is
hold on, because yep. These urban advantage slides are always fascinating, but I just wanted to kind of point this particular slide out to the council. I dropped by the form-based code workshop. I believe Councilmember Lett Glover was there as well. And these slides in particular fascinated me the most because this is what we have a lot of land use like, these suburban shopping centers with big seas of parking out front. And it was really interesting to illustrate the additional intensities, you know, if there's a market for it, that could transform some of those and integrate these big shopping centers in with a neighborhood. So I just wanted to point those out to council that they take special note of that because, you know, we're talking about the form-based code in downtown. This particular element could happen anywhere in the city. And, you know, as the city evolves and things change, you have opportunities that may arise. So I think as we develop our code, we want to keep a special eye on the transformation of those suburban shopping centers and what the potentials could be, particularly around Fiesta Mall area. Thanks.
And because we saved the best for last, the Optico subconsults with Urban Advantage and Steve Price, who does photo transformations. This is illustrative. It's to show you, you know, what could happen over time. This is the intersection of Robeson and Main. You'll notice the building on the corner, the historic building that was redone several years ago. The first photo, we introduced light rail. So not much changes, but light rail is there. And we get some new public investments there. Then maybe over time, you get something on the opposite corner. A new development that really gets things going, and then again more time passes and maybe you get some more development that goes in, and finally 20 maybe 30 years down the road, Main Street is transformed. The character is still there. It still feels, just looking at this photo, it still feels the same scale and character, but it also shows that on the corner those historic buildings can be integrated and they can be made to fit into redevelopment as it comes along. Okay, coming up in the end of this year and the beginning of next year, hopefully this fall we'll get through all these all this vision and goals and we'll have our objectives for the plan and we'll be able to move on from there. We're going to continue to work on the form-based code. There's a lot of detailed regulation that we didn't want to bore you with, but that we're still calibrating it to make it Mesa specific. Starting in the winter and spring, we're going to start taking the plan out again to the committee or to the community as a whole so that we can start getting their feedback on these goals and visions. We're going to start putting together our implementation tools and hopefully start getting a draft of the Central Main Plan started. We'll also hopefully move forward on the form-based code and have a public review draft that we can start taking out to the public as well. And then early spring and spring and early summer next year, we'll be back to you hopefully with a draft, a final draft of both the plan and the form-based code for your consideration and adoption.
Okay. I remember in earlier discussions about our code rewrite, we talked about a couple of different options for downtown, this being one of them. The other was just a traditional code with transit-oriented development type elements. Is that correct? Are you telling us now that the direction that most folks want to go in is a form-based code for this area?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Richens, as we've continued to look at the options, we've got the current TC zones downtown. We had talked about the updated zoning code transitioned those to a downtown, but kept basically we didn't change anything about those codes for that zoning that's currently downtown. We talked about adding a TMX district to the code to take care of the light rail station areas, but in discussions with council most recently, we decided to drop that from the code in favor of the form-based code option. In terms of downtown, our goal as we're working on this form-based code is to apply it to the downtown area, or at least most of it, when it's adopted, and eliminate the town center zoning district from the zoning code. If there are areas that we feel like don't really apply well for the form-based code, we get to some of the fringes, we'd go back and use some of the other traditional zones in those areas.
I think that's great. I support you in that. I think a form-based code makes we still have to create the market that makes all this work, you know, but at least the regulatory environment makes it a little bit easier. What about an old strip center? I think of like that Kmart shopping center way out on Main Street and something.
Lindsay,
maybe. Mm-hmm. Is it Lindsay? And you think of the big parking field that they have in front of that building. Would that be covered by traditional code, or is there an opportunity that if a redevelopment plan wanted to be put together for a property like that, they could say, well, is there a form-based approach we can take in redeveloping this particular shopping center?
Vice Mayor, Councilman Richards, we'll have at least three options available in the new zoning code. One potentially would be the form-based code. We're still learning about it and the best places and sizes of properties to apply it to, and that may be large enough to kind of have an isolated form-based zone area. Another is the U designators that we're adding into the code, where you could zone a property C2U and have that, or LC, I guess, would be the new designation, the U designator, which would give you that opportunity for that more urban form to occur within a traditional zone. And then the third one is the infill district that is part of the new code, which allows you to basically write your own zoning code for an individual piece of property to help facilitate that infill redevelopment.
The DMB approach.
Right, on a smaller scale.
Big.
So we're trying to put several tools available, and we can work with the property owner to see which fits best for what they're trying to do. But in each of those cases, we'd be able to help that transformation take place. We would probably look, if somebody's using the U or using the infill district, we would probably look to the form-based standards as kind of the guide for what would apply to the property.
Now, is having all those options, I mean, legally, is that going to be okay? And do you think we'll create more confusion? You know, do we need, I hear people want clarity and certainty. Is this flexibility make it overly confusing? That's my only concern.
Councilman Richens, Donna Bronski from the City Attorney's Office. There certainly, these are all generally well-established legal principles in these different options. As for confusion, I'll defer to the planning director, but normally developers and people who own property like to have more choices rather than less when they're developing their property.
Thank you. All right. Are there any further questions, comments? Dennis, any more? Scott? Alex? Chris? All right. Then thank you very much for that presentation. We look forward to getting the plan more developed and moving it along as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Next, we have acknowledgement of receipt of minutes. We have the Museum and Cultural Advisory Board meeting from August 26th, moved by Councilmember Summers, seconded by Councilmember Finter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Dennis, you said you had... You already reported on that one. Okay. Anything else then? All right. I'll say last night, Shay and Jeff were at, give us a report on last night. We had a meeting for the design team for our light rail coming through downtown and got a lot of our folks who were on our stakeholders committee come back and give their input. How did that end up last night?
Yeah, Vice Mayor, Council, it was a great meeting. The stakeholder group, as you're aware, met for 8 months, 9 months to go through a lot of design issues. And we reached out to them again to have them meet the design team who will be designing the light rail extension. And we got a great response. I think I had to put a percentage. I think 95% of the people who attended those meetings several months ago showed up last night.
We had a room full again.
Yeah, we did. And the designers were really excited to get started and pick up where we left off with the conceptual design guidelines and start talking about the flexibility that existed with Metro's kit of parts, if you will, and station design. And it was a really, really good meeting. I think we have very positive momentum for the project, and we're looking to capitalize on that and move it forward.
And we had some interesting exercises to go through to get ideas out. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Dave.
I did forget one event that the mayor and Dina and myself attended. It was the Valley Metro Clean Air Awards, employee of the City of Mesa, Officer Trevor Stadler, won an award for bike commuter of the year. He had ridden his bike to work 170 days last year. And the thing you need to realize about Officer Stadler is he's an officer for the Mesa PD, but when he gets to work, he's a bike cop. So not only did he ride his bike to work, but then when he's at work, he's on a bike as well. And needless to say, he seen McLaughlin, who was the MC, gave him a little he wore his bike shorts, and they were teasing him about looking a lot like a UPS driver or something. So anyway, a lot of the girls in the audience were raving about him. But it was great. Officer, I tease him publicly because he's been a friend of mine for about 20 years. And so he's a great guy, and he deserves credit. He's been riding his bike for the city for years. And so it was neat to see him get recognized.
All right. Thank you. Then scheduling of meetings, Chris?
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just a reminder that the Getting Arizona Involved in Neighborhoods Gain event is this Saturday from 5 to 8 p.m., so invite all our neighborhood organizations to get out and get a lot of participation this Saturday. We will not be having a study session this coming Thursday, November 11th. That will be Veterans Day, so we'll be having our Veterans Day parade here in downtown San Antonio, or San Antonio, where'd that come from?
There. You did it again.
You know what's sad? San Antonio doesn't even have a parade for Veterans Day. In Veterans Day parade in downtown Mesa from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And then our next council meeting will be Monday, November 15th. And we'll probably start that a little bit early just because the council won't have a chance to review the items on the agenda with the staff prior to that on Thursday, so we look for that start date maybe a little, or start time maybe a little bit earlier.
All right, Christian, thank you. How many years have you been here now?
Just obviously not enough. I still need to work on it.
All right, thank you. We do have one pre-scheduled public opinion. Brad Stratton, is he still here? No? Okay, then. From there, we will just go to items from citizens present. Do we have any to speak?
No speakers, Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Linda. Then I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
Move to adjourn the Alamo Valley. I'll second the first. The basement of the Alamo.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.